Good morning. The government is officially in a partial shutdown as Democrats push for a separate vote on funding and reforms for Homeland Security.
Our intention is by Tuesday to fund all agencies of the federal government except for that one, and then we'll have 2 weeks of good faith negotiations to figure it out.
Another major batch of Epstein-related materials gets released with big name drops. And why Olympic glory doesn't always mean financial stability for American athletes. It's Monday, February 2nd. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. While the Senate came to an agreement to separate out extended funding for the Department of Homeland Security, the House was not in session to vote before the midnight deadline on Friday, pushing the government into a partial shutdown. House Speaker Mike Johnson said in an interview with Meet the Press yesterday that he was confident the shutdown would end soon after the House reconvenes today, and he expressed optimism about further negotiations.
Some of these conditions and requests that they've made are obviously reasonable and should happen, but others are going to require a lot more negotiation.
President Trump was reportedly the catalyst for the bipartisan deal-making that's unfolding. Trump reached out directly to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, marking a stark departure from his position last year when he refused to work with Democratic leaders on averting the longest shutdown in history. The private outreach comes as some Republican members of Congress and strategists have voiced concerns about immigration enforcement becoming a liability for the party in this year's midterm elections. And at a moment where House Republicans have little margin for error, as Natalie Andrews with The Wall Street Journal explained to us.
Mike Johnson has one of the narrowest House majorities in the history of the House of Representatives. No one is envious of his job and what he has to do in order to get things passed on partisan lines. And the tricky part of that is the House of Representatives is a group that is not young. They are not all healthy. You have one person go down with a cold and you're in a risky spot.
As lawmakers negotiate over funding and ultimately over stipulations for ICE funding, the actions of immigration agents on the street are still at the forefronts of minds across the country. That's from a protest in Minneapolis on Friday as the city still reels from the killings of Alex Preddy and Renee Good by federal immigration agents. On Saturday, protests also took place in other cities like Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon, and New York. Meanwhile, much of what Democratic lawmakers are asking for in their negotiations could have a direct effect on the actions of immigration agents on the ground.
Democrats want things like they don't want ICE officers to wear masks. They'd like ICE officers to have their name on their uniform, like other members of law enforcement, right? A local police force, if you will. They want them to be marked. They want to see a de-escalation in force instead of doing checks on people, feeling like they can ask people if they're citizens or not. They'd like to see something that's more targeted.
Speaker Johnson has already pushed back on the idea of the ban on masking and the names on uniforms, saying that it could lead to doxing of immigration agents. As Andrews pointed out to us, both parties are arguing that time is of the essence in getting this bill through.
Republicans would say, you know, Democrats shouldn't hold this bill up because ICE is already funded and the DHS bill funds the Coast Guard. And FEMA and several swaths of the country are currently buried in ice and snow and may need FEMA funding. So it does give a tension point. It gives a place where you can negotiate and you can say, hey, we need this to be effective immediately. And we need these restrictions on Immigration and Customs Enforcement before they can spend their money.
Yesterday, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries told ABC that Democrats did not agree to fast-track the package of bills passed by the Senate, which means the soonest the partial shutdown can be resolved with a vote is Tuesday. Over the weekend, another batch of documents from the Epstein files were released by the federal government. But despite anticipation over whether the latest release would produce new incriminating evidence against any notable figures, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche says they likely won't lead to any new charges. Speaking on CNN on Sunday, Blanche said even though some disturbing materials were included in the latest release, the administration's position hadn't changed.
There's a lot of horrible photographs that appear to be taken by Mr. Epstein or were people around him. But that doesn't allow us necessarily to prosecute somebody. And that's what's important for the American people. And the victims want to be made whole. And so we want that. The Attorney General wants that more than anything. But that doesn't mean we can just create evidence or that we can just kind of come up with a case that isn't there.
Some of the latest revelations in the latest document dump include salacious details about Bill Gates and women Epstein allegedly connected him with. Gates called the accusations absurd and completely false. The co-owner of the New York Giants, Steve Tisch, was also revealed to have corresponded with Epstein. Tisch said it was a brief association, that he never went to Epstein's island, and he regretted the connection. Neither Gates or Tisch have been charged with a crime connected to Epstein. Friday's files also included never-before-seen photos of former President Bill Clinton and Epstein together. The House is expected to vote this week on whether to hold both Bill and Hillary Clinton in contempt of Congress for failing to testify in the Epstein probe. The Clintons have claimed they didn't know about Epstein's crimes. According to the New York Times, President Trump, his wife Melania Trump, and other Trump-related terms are mentioned more than 38,000 times in the latest batch of materials, none of which included direct communication between Trump and Epstein. Trump has denied any wrongdoing in connection with the deceased financier. Blanche said on CNN the DOJ did not find credible information to merit further investigation into the president.
So look, it's not about President Trump. It's about a ton of people, multiple people that were, quote, in the Epstein files. And what I think folks will see when they review the materials we released is that there have been hundreds of calls made to the FBI where allegations are made by either anonymous individuals or people who are very quickly determined to not be credible, whether it's the nature of what they're saying or the fact they won't provide any information right. or corroboration. And that's part of the Epstein files.
Blanche said the DOJ's review of more than 6 million documents is over and that the department is waiting on judicial approval before releasing what he described as a small number of documents that are still outstanding. The DOJ was compelled to release the documents by a law passed in Congress late last year. Ro Khanna, a House Democrat from California who co-sponsored the bill, told NBC's Meet the Press yesterday he thinks the administration hasn't done enough to comply with that law.
They've released at best half the documents, but even those shock the conscience of this country. I mean, you have some of the most wealthy individuals, tech leaders, finance leaders, politicians, all implicated in some way, having emails about wanting to go to Epstein's island, knowing that Epstein was a pedophile.
Meanwhile, dozens of victims of Epstein's were shocked to learn the DOJ failed to redact their names from the latest release. The Wall Street Journal reports 43 victims' full names were included in the documents. Many had not had their identities revealed publicly or were minors when they were abused. The DOJ has since been temporarily taking down certain documents to make new redactions. Khanna said he spoke with some victims about this issue.
It's frankly one of the largest scandals, in my view, in our country's history, and there is a demand for elite accountability. But the survivors' lawyers that I've talked to have said that the survivors are still upset. They're upset that many of their names accidentally came out without redactions, and they want to make sure the rest of the files come out.
Olympic athletes are making their way to Milan for the Winter Games, which officially kick off this week. And while Team USA has more medals than any other country across the Summer and Winter Games, there is a big disparity in how American athletes are compensated for their achievements on the Olympic stage. The U.S. government spends $0 to reward athletes, but this year a grant from billionaire financier Ross Stevens wants to ensure that competitors are walking away with something. Here's the Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman in a video posted to social media explaining the gift.
Stevens is giving $200,000 to each U.S. Olympic and Paralympic athlete. The first half will come 20 years after their first qualifying Olympic Games or at age 45, whichever comes later. The other $100,000 will be a guaranteed benefit for their families after they die.
Stevens made a $100 million donation to the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, a record for the organization, to fund these payments. The money will go to each athlete regardless of how they perform. Now, to be clear, athletes on Team USA do receive prize money from the Olympic Committee if they medal in their events. But even then, the U.S. lags behind a lot of other nations.
Each country determines how payments work for their given team, and the U.S. Olympic Committee just doesn't spend that much money on these Olympians when they get a medal.
Josh Schaefer is a reporter for Yahoo Finance and spoke to the network as the last Winter Games wound down in 2022. Schaefer said the money isn't insignificant, but the comparison to other countries can feel stark.
U.S. Olympians make $37,500 for a gold medal, $22,500 for a silver, and $15,000 for a bronze. Obviously, that's no small amount of money, but we have a list of several different countries and what they pay out for gold medals. And you'll see that the U.S. is kind of at the bottom of that list, trailing the likes of France and Russia that are slightly above them. And then Singapore leads all nations with a payout of $744,000 for a gold medal.
Those figures haven't changed since the last Winter Games and barely budged for the Summer Games in Paris in 2024. Meanwhile, countries like Russia and China offer retirement stipends or pensions, and in South Korea, athletes have earned pensions since the 70s. Most people think of big-name Olympic athletes and assume they're doing fine. And the big ones probably are, if they've managed to score endorsement and sponsorship deals. But many Olympians struggle financially as they train without pay and try to juggle paid work. Here's what Chris Masder, the first ever American man to medal in singles luge, told NBC News.
The thought of staying in the sport without being able to make anything or to be able to give back, to just even pay rent, it's a really serious thing that people don't know exists. I was a bartender, I worked banquets, restaurants. It's a fight to get to that level.
Jonathan Cheever, who competed in snowboard for Team USA in Pyeongchang in 2018, had a similar take. Here he is speaking with HBO's Real Sports.
I expected a lot more support rather than running up my credit card debt into, you know, close to $70,000, $80,000.
Some Olympic events get underway midweek, but the official opening ceremony for the Winter Games is this Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. And finally, a few other stories we're following. President Trump says the Kennedy Center will close for 2 years for a renovation starting in July. Trump, who named himself chairman of the Kennedy Center's board, has seen a number of artists and performers withdraw from scheduled events, citing his takeover. Philip Glass pulled the premiere of his new symphony titled Lincoln. The Washington National Opera said it will leave after nearly 50 years, and the hit musical Hamilton canceled a run scheduled for this year. The new head of the center's artistic programming also quit after less than 2 weeks on the job last week. A 5-year-old and his father, who were detained by immigration officers in Minneapolis last week, sparking outraged headlines nationally, have been released from an ICE facility in Texas following a judge's order. They returned to Minnesota on Sunday. The father, Adrian Conejo Arias, and son Liam are originally from Ecuador. The government says the father entered the U.S. illegally. The family's lawyer says he has an asylum claim pending, which allows him to stay in the U.S. The judge, in his order, described the Trump administration's actions as ill-conceived and incompetently implemented in pursuit of quotas, quote, even if it requires traumatizing children. And finally, Sunday was music's biggest night, the Grammys. Among the big winners were the animated musical K-pop Demon Hunters with the song Golden, which took home the first ever Grammy for the hugely popular K-pop genre. Olivia Dean, singer of the massive hit Man I Need, won Best New Artist. And film director Steven Spielberg became part of the exclusive EGOT Club, meaning he has won an Emmy, an Oscar, a Tony, and now a Grammy for producing the documentary Music by John Williams. The night's two biggest prizes went to Kendrick Lamar and SZA for their song Luther, which won the Grammy for Record of the Year, and Bad Bunny won for Album of the Year for his album Debí Tirar Más Fotos. Bad Bunny is the first Latin artist ever to take home the Grammy's top award. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. New York Magazine takes us inside what it calls the conservative campus revolution and how Charlie Kirk's youth political movement was galvanized after his killing and in some ways co-opted by darker forces. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.